As you know, I'm your host, Miles. I'm with my co-host, Mark.
And yay. Miles.
And Mark, how are you feeling? Because I know you just had surgery.
Yeah. It was awesome, man. It was like a spiritual awakening. I felt something just like leaving my body. Literally.
The pain. You felt the pain leaving your body.
Yeah. Watching my hip go away. And then being replaced with alien technology.
Go ahead, what you saying?
If you start to get feedback, that might be what it's from.
Have you ever seen the movie Repo with Jude Law? I think it was Jude Law and Forrest Whitaker. You ever seen that movie?
Yes. It was awesome.
Anytime I think about like anybody having surgery, I'm just like, oh, one of these days they're gonna have to rent out hips and hearts, and then you know.
I'm waiting for the day that they have a 3D printer in the operating room. So they take out a part, whatever it is, and then they just punch it in. See, that's all you can hear.
Right.
And then they put it in and go, nope, you're about half a centimeter off. That's okay. We'll just print up another one.
Right. And I'm saying, we're getting closer to that. It's amazing how what science is able to do now. I've seen some interesting things on the internet.
Well, it's like, organ donating will be a thing of the past.
Right.
It's not that far away.
Right. Especially not with Corona and stuff going on now. I can imagine. They're not going to want body part from anybody else. Like, ooh, where'd you get that from? I don't want that heart. You keep that heart.
Exactly. That came from New York, man. Fuck that. I'm not doing that.
Is that a liver from Florida? Oh, no. I'm okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't need a Florida liver.
Yeah. Jeez. But he was only 25. It's just still a liver. It's from Florida. Sorry. Right.
I'll take my chances with my liver right here. I'll take my chances.
Yeah, no, it's like, I'm feeling okay. As surgeries go, it was a pretty good experience.
And right.
I am pain-free and actually drug-free, so all is good.
What did they drug you up with?
The funny thing is, everybody is so concerned about the narcotic addiction that, you know, they don't really want to send you out anymore with drugs.
Right.
They're like, here, take some Tylenol. And I'm like, okay, I just had major surgery and you're sending me home with Tylenol.
Right.
It's just the way they do it now.
Right.
And I completely understand because, you know, Oxy has really ruined a lot of people's lives.
Right.
They did prescribe me some Oxy, but I never took it.
Right.
The surgery was done so well that I didn't have any pain.
Right.
I mean, I really didn't have any pain. You know, I've had some pain with the incision itself.
Mm. Right.
But outside of that, you know, and that's just minor.
Right.
It's like having two pigs stuck together and trying to rip them apart. You know, it's like you hear the squealing. It was based in me. They've done so much over the course of time. You know, I had another what do they call these things? I just went blank. It's not called the device. What is it? Implant thing. Implant. I had another device. Implant. Yeah. I had an implant in my foot like 30 years ago.
Right.
And let me tell you something. The difference between that surgery and this surgery is like light years. Literally light years.
Right.
Because I remember back then getting like all these Percocets.
Right.
Here, just, you know, like two or three refills of Percocets.
Oh, boy.
It's like, you know, and that was at a time of my life that I was like, oh, this will be fun. I'm just going to hold on to these and, you know, see what pay happens. My rent.
All right.
But to today where I had this on the incision, they put this an actual device that I had to carry around for a week. Mm-hmm. That was this the best way to describe it. It was like a air compressor.
Okay.
That was keeping a dry hermetic seal on the dress over the incision.
Right.
And so it would, every once in a while, it would like, you know, start going off. And I'm like,
right.
The first time it went off, couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. I'm like laying in bed and it's like, and I'm like, what the hell's that? My wife wakes up. She's thinking something's wrong with me, right? It's like, oh my God, is that him? What's that? What is it?
Oh God.
So every once in a while it would go off. But for the most part, it was just a pain in the neck because I had to have it on 24/7 for a week.
Right. Whoa.
But it's like you could take a shower, but it had to be the device itself had to be outside the shower.
Right.
but when I, you know, I fortunately was able to remove it yesterday.
Right.
And it's really amazing what they do, man. The scar doesn't even look like a scar. You might, you know, like, I don't know how many times you've had sutures, but, you know, it used to be, I've got scars all up and down my body from all these different, altercations I've had over my life.
Right.
where the suturing, you know, was kind of come out like a caterpillar.
Right.
You know, that caterpillar look. I mean, this thing is like, it looks like a seam.
Wow.
Like nothing, not like a zipper, like the old style, but this thing is like great.
Like nothing, almost like nothing happened.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That is amazing. That is amazing.
Except when I, you know, when I go by an electronic device and my hip starts like vibrating.
Like, oh boy.
Okay.
Oh.
That tells me that, yeah, I had something done.
Like, oh, that's new.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Did you had any like, you know, pre-notions before going in, like anything you like worried about having surgery? Like for me, like I never had any major surgery, but one of the things I'm always thinking in my mind, like if I have surgery, like I know I want to tell the doctor, like, make sure I'm knocked out. Cause one of my biggest fears is waking up during the middle of surgery. Like I mean, what was the name of it? There was this one movie. I think it was called Awake. I can't remember. It starred, Jessica Alba, Terrence Howard, and I think Hayden Christensen, the one who played Darth Vader in the prequels of Star Wars, in the film, he had to have surgery, and he woke up during surgery, and, you know, he had, like, an out-of-body experience, and he could feel all the stuff that was happening during the surgery. And ever since I saw that movie, I've just been, like, so paranoid of surgery, like, oh, God, what if I wake up? What if I feel that's everything?
Like, yeah, that's like me going to work. That's kind of how I feel. It's like going to work. It's like, oh, you know, I was like, what is that? I actually had a choice to be awake during the surgery.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, because as you know, I'm such a small person. you know, I was running into a couple different risk factors, so they didn't give me general anesthesia. Right. They gave me an epidural and some other stuff. But the doctor said, you know, I have had patients that have wanted to be awake during this.
Wow.
But he was very honest with me. He goes, look, I'm going to have a chisel and a hammer during this. I mean, literally. So I'm just going, I'm going to tell you up front, I am going to be banging around in there, right?
Oh, no.
And you're going to, you know, jostling you around, all this other stuff. It was really funny. God. I was just laughing. I was laughing. Okay, doc. No. That's okay. That's okay. Put me out. Just put me out. I'll wake up after. That's great.
I don't even like being awake for when I have a root canal, so I can imagine trying to be awake for a surgery. Oh, no.
No, no thanks.
Same.
Yeah, it was, did I have any anxiety? Let me see. So the night before I was going to the hospital,
right.
I looked at my wife and I are in the living room, and I looked at her and I said, I just want you to know that, you know, my life insurance is paid up and the policy's over here. And I also get some through work. So I just want you to know that.
Like, you'll be fine.
I mean, I literally said this, right? And just deadpan. I was serious. It was like, I just want you to know. Dude, let me tell you something. Some people go and they're like, oh, man, you're so brave. I didn't feel nothing when I went there. Yeah, fuck that. Fuck that. I was scared shitless going in.
Right.
Because let me tell you something. As you get older, that shit matters.
Right.
You know, because when you are looking at the last third of your life, I would say somewhere in there, probably last third. You know, anytime you go under anesthesia, you worry.
Right.
So, but I was in a really great place. I had phenomenal care, of, you know, all the different surgeries I've had over time.
Right.
Hands down, the best experience I've ever had. Hands down. Because everybody was positive. I was like, damn, man, what is up here? I mean, they got to be like pumping laughing gas or something through the hallways, because everybody was like pleasant. Everybody.
Right.
I am talking from the moment I walked in the door and talked to the receptionist all the way through to recovery and the PT person. Oh, it was phenomenal. I never had an experience like that, ever. You know, usually somebody in that chain is like, there's another guy I got to talk to, and I'm going to have to walk him through this, and I'm going to give him instructions, and he's going to say, fuck you, and I'm not really going to do them, and, you know, and then he'll be back, and, you know, all this stuff.
Right.
But not here, man. Not at all. I mean, it was great.
Yeah, that's you rarely hear that. Usually when you hear people go to the hospital, they always come back with some type of horror story. Like, my doctor didn't know what he was talking about, or this nurse, she couldn't find my vein, she just stabbed me with the needle. Yeah. Like, you know, you always hear stories like that.
Seven times.
Right, exactly. I've actually had that happen. Like, I'll never forget when I think I was leaving town. I think around this one time, one of the first few times I was leaving for Haiti, and the nurse, you know, she's hitting my arm trying to find the vein, and then she, you know, she sticks the needle, she goes, oh, that's not it, and then she pulls it out. I'm like, wait, whoa, hold on, wait.
What is this, exploratory? What are you doing?
Like, after that, I've never been so nervous in my life about needles until that moment.
Yeah, man, she was like duck, duck, goose with your arm.
Right.
She's like, look, well, that looks like a whap. Oh, jeez. Yeah, I've had that. Matter of fact, I have had a nurse taking blood, hit a nerve in my arm that I lost feeling in two of my fingers
for
6 months.
Wow.
Oh yeah, no, dude, it was crazy. I had I actually took, this was the next morning, I took a picture of my arm. From my elbow to my wrist was black and blue.
I mean,
she's like this little Ukrainian woman who had been going through for a while. And, you know, she was like, yes,
Sit down. We're going to take blood.
I'm like, okay, Helga, no problem. I'm happy to do that. And a whap, man. I just, wow. Yeah,
right.
My whole arm just went boom.
Yeah. That is insane. I've gotten to the point where, like, I don't even see my doctor until I was able to cyber stalk him online to look into his profile and figure out who this guy is before I even deal with the doctor. I'm that paranoid now. Like, I need to know how your mind frame is first before
yeah,
I see.
It's like, let me look at your Yelp score.
Right.
I'm gonna go look at his Yelp score, and then I'm gonna find him on Facebook, and then right? You know.
Find out if he's going through a divorce or something like. Oh,
he's yeah, going exactly. You got to go yeah. through the AMA, you know, or he's like, disciple of some weird religion or some shit.
Right.
Jesus.
Find out that he just came out of, the Alcohol Anonymous Club. Like, oh, I don't think I want to see that doctor tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Girl. It's like, what are the motor skills of a surgeon after 6 months of rehab? I'm not sure. I don't know, man. Yeah, but I mean, if
look into it.
If I had to have it done, you know, it was the best place to do it. And yes, right. I was anxious, no question.
That is a good thing, though. It's funny that you said that about the motor skills of a surgeon after rehab, because I watched this documentary recently, and it was a documentary mostly about video games, and they did a test with all these pre-med students. And they were trying to figure out it was two groups. One group A was like, you know, the video game crowd who grew up playing video games, would play video games up to like 12 hours or so. And group B was med students that barely played video games or almost never played any video games. And they were trying to see what kind of effect it had on the brain. And the subject was basically, it was like a remote control version of a surgery, basically like with one of those Atari sticks, basically.
Right.
Basically, they were cutting something open and closing it with just the robotic arms. And the students from B actually scored better.
Hold on.
Uh-huh.
How do you even know about Atari?
I've seen a lot of documentaries.
What were you, like, two?
I don't even think I was here yet.
Exactly.
I don't even think I was a thought
Atari.
In any
way.
Like, I don't even think any of my older siblings even had Atari. I think they showed up after Atari. That's
oh,
how
God, that. Atari. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. That was just weird.
Little blast from the past there.
Yeah. It gave me a headache.
The med students and the second group, the one who barely played games, actually scored higher than the ones who played games. Now, mind you, they were doing something that they've been training for a while, you know, to be able to cut somebody open and everything. But it was some reason there was a disconnect between the ones who played a lot of games compared to the ones who don't play games at all. It was almost like something about their frontal lobe. I remember the documentary was saying, like, the act of playing video games when, even though, you know, they were doing not an actual procedure, but, you know, a simulated procedure. The fact
right.
that they were looking it through a screen and, you know, using that game pedal or stick, analog stick, you know, it shut off the brain, basically. It put them to sleep, basically. I forgot what was the phrase that they used for the frontal lobe.
Well, it was like being in the zone.
Right, basically. Mm-hmm. And, yep. it wasn't the same for, you know, the students who barely play games because, you know, their mind doesn't have that connection with, you know, with the analog stick and the surgery. It was able to just focus on the surgery
right.
itself. And it made me wonder about, like, how everyday life works with gamers. Because I feel like, you know, this generation now, not even just my generation, but, you know, this whole world now, it's a lot, I think gaming's more accepted through different age groups than it was before. You know what I mean? Like recently,
no.
I was...
No? No, I don't. No. I have no idea. I have no idea what you're talking about, bro. What do you mean games? What kind of games? Gamers? Well, what's a gamer?
The reason why I say that is because I if you look at the video game crowd now, because when I was growing up, I always considered video games with something kids do. That's a kid thing, you know,
sure.
Only because I was a kid. But now, you know, you get older and you play certain storylines, you know, the storylines are so mature and you can tell that this is not for kids. This is like I remember specifically the moment I realized, and I was a little bit younger, around, I want to say 2002.
I want to say that. Well, around 28. When I was around 28, I realized it.
I went to buy the game Max Payne on PlayStation 2. And I can't remember whether it was my mother, my godfather. One of them took me to Toys R Us to get this. You remember Toys R Us?
Talk about blasts from the past.
Right. And I remember, I'm so excited. I got the game in my hands. And we get to the cashier. And the cashier's looking at the game. She looks at me. And she looks at my guardian, whoever was there. I can't remember if it was my mother or my godfather. But she's like, hey, this game is mature. You know, you got to be, you know, 17 and older to play. Now, lucky me. You know, my guardian had no clue that video games were the only for kids, you know? So they were just like, yeah, it's a game. You're like, it's a game. They can have it. It's a game.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm over here panicking, looking at the cashier like, shut up, lady. I kind of know what I'm doing.
You're stepping in my lane, bitch. It's like, you need to back off. Right. This is mine.
I'll never be so
You're
terrified.
Impeding my development.
Exactly.
Max Payne.
Right.
Oh, God.
And it's crazy to see from where games were in 2002 to now. You know, like, you saw the trailer I sent you for Far Cry 6, right?
Yes.
Now, you see that.
With what's his name from.
From Breaking Bad, the Spike Lee.
From Breaking Bad.
From Better Call Saul. I can never pronounce
what's
his name.
It's Hispanic.
It's a very Hispanic name. Like, yeah. And I have a list, so I'm definitely gonna like fuck up the whole saying of the name. But it's incredible because when you look at the.
But he was
the
drug dealer. He was the Chicken King, right. Drug dealer Breaking Bad, whatever his name is.
Chicken Meth King in Breaking Bad. And I always thought that was funny. The only black Spanish guy in that show was the one that was selling chicken and meth. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. A drug kingpin selling chicken.
Like, you got creative. So creative.
Yeah. There's a lot of punnage going on in that show.
But you know, when I first saw that trailer for Far Cry 6, I almost didn't realize it was gameplay footage. I thought that was the actual actor, you know, walking and talking on camera. And then, you know, as the footage continued, that's when I realized, like, oh, this is the game. This is all part of the game. Yeah. And,
why do you think the military uses games for recruiting?
Right. That is true. I've learned that.
I mean, because that stuff is, like, crazy.
Right. It literally be actual missions, almost.
Yeah. And there's a reason for it, because it desensitizes people to violence.
Right.
Now, there's a lot of studies that talk about, no, it doesn't really impact it that way, or the violence in children has nothing to do with games, and yada yada. I'm like, well, let me see. If you sit a kid down and show him that you're going to kill things, and I don't care what they are,
right,
whether they be men or aliens or monsters or whatever,
right,
and he kills things 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Day after day after day. Believe me, that kid, he may not have the tendency to go out and rob a store,
right,
or shoot somebody, you know, to make it look rough. But if he gets into a situation where he has to use a weapon, he is going to be much more able or prepared to do that,
right?
And the military knows it,
right?
So the more realistic those games can be to be used as recruiting, that I mean, they're all for that stuff.
Right.
They may not tell you that.
Right.
They may not come out and we support Bungie.com. You know that kind of thing. you know, they, but they know the effects.
Right. Yeah, that's true. But right before I got my license, when I first got my permit, I played a lot of driving games, almost so I can practice how to drive behind the actual car, behind the wheel. Like in Grand Theft Auto, you know, you could do whatever you want in the game, but I would, you know, literally follow the rules while I'm driving. You know, I'll stop at a red light. You know, I'll try to do a 3-4 turn. Like, I literally would take everything I learned from my driving class and then practice at home in the video game. Like, okay, this is how I turn properly. You know, my issue when I first started driving was I kept doing these wide turns. So I kept practicing doing turns in the game just so I could get it. And then I passed the test in one try. I got my license in one try. And I was like, oh, man, these video games. These games are not just for, you know, entertainment. You actually can learn something from these games.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And what you can learn is the scary part.
Right, yeah, yeah. Because Grand Theft Auto taught me a lot more than
how to use a how to use a large fusion rifle against a pack of alien creatures.
Right.
I started playing games... Oh, geez, very long time ago. When they came out in computer form, before Xbox.
Right, okay.
You know, and it was much later in my life. I didn't play games as a young man.
Right, so you, as an adult, you started playing.
Yeah, like 40.
Right, so you was really an adult.
Oh, yeah.
So you was aware
48
of...
48 ain't that old, bro.
No, I'm not that old. I'm 10 years away from 40. I'm just saying that 40 is you're a legit adult. You know, like... You're a legit adult.
You're a
like,
legit
21,
adult.
You're allowed to... 21, you're allowed to drink. You know, 18, you're allowed to go to war. But, you know, 30...
Yeah, exactly. You don't have... You're not encumbered yet. You're not encumbered yet by adulthood. Yeah. At 40, you are, yeah.
You're Steven. You're Steven Pro at that point.
Yeah, you've got your membership pass by
that. Right. At that point, you know, you probably got a mortgage. You know, you might be married. Like 40, you're an actual adult at 40.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You got hypertension. You've got all that fun stuff that comes with it. You know, the stress. Nothing's ever easy after that. Yeah, right. No, I know. Believe me, I know.
Before 40, when you saw games come about, did it not interest you? Did you think they were just for kids?
No, I just wasn't the types of games before that didn't interest me at all.
Right.
I mean.
But like songs,
Mario Brothers, mm-hmm. and, you know, all that stuff.
Right, Sonic.
Which I watched my nephew do.
Right.
Mortal
Kombat.
Yeah, and I just never interested me.
Right.
You know, I was more action oriented.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would rather go to a Clint Eastwood movie than to sit down and game.
Right. You know what I mean? Right. With different experience.
Yeah.
Right, especially the games back then.
But then
mm-hmm.
I had a friend say, hey, why don't you look at this and see if you like this? And it was a computer game.
Right.
And it was, I think it was Halo.
Okay.
And that was really my first introduction
to
the gaming world.
Right.
And my buddy and I would play
the multiplayer.
The multiplayer, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, we weren't online.
Because it's early Xbox, right?
Yeah. It was like I was playing on a computer before I played on Xbox.
Right. Okay.
So I was playing on a computer with that game, mm-hmm. and then you could, and then there was Xbox.
Right.
And then Xbox, you know, you could play, it wasn't multiplayer, it was called something else. Mm-hmm. You could both play in the same game.
Right.
And because when you were playing multiplayer, that was more like there was a specific map or game
right.
that you would have other guys be your team.
Mm-hmm.
in the multiplayer, whereas this, you know, you don't have the storylines to most, yeah, like with the storylines with most games as they come out, you could have a buddy go with you.
Right.
I just can't remember. I can't remember a lot, but, you know, that was one of the things I can't remember.
Right.
But I think what it was just something that I had never experienced before as a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it just caught my attention.
Right.
And I just, you know, I started playing a lot, actually. and my wife was like, You're addicted. You're addicted. She would stop. I would be like down in the basement because we had a finished basement in this place we lived in. And she would stick her hand in the door. She goes, You're addicted. Come upstairs. You're addicted. You know, fast forward a few years. And then she's saying, Shut it down.
Video games can be very addictive, though. They can be.
Oh, man. Yeah. No, you got
to. You tell yourself you want to play for an hour, and next you know where 7 hours done went by, and you're still, you know, going against the aliens from outer space.
Yeah, it's like crack.
Right.
It's like smoking crack, man. No. I can get to the next level. It's only going to take me a little while. Next thing you know, next thing you know, it's 6 a.m. It's like, shit. I gotta go to work. Oh, God.
Yeah, that's the worst. That's the worst when you know you have to work and then you're just like, oh, just 1 hour. I'll just play for an hour. Yeah. And you're ready after midnight. You're like, I gotta be up for like 2-3 hours.
Yeah,
and
it's like having a 5-pound bag of potato chips saying, I'm only gonna eat one.
Eat the Pringles.
Yeah. It's like, I'm only gonna eat one package.
Once you start, you can't stop.
Yeah, exactly.
So is those games like Halo the only ones that you like to play?
I only played that game, and then I moved, and I probably did game for like, geez, probably 7 years.
Oh wow!
And then I had a buddy, same buddy actually, call me up. He goes, hey, it was like a drug deal. He was like, hey man, I found something that you should check out. Why are you so quiet? What are you whispering about? Dude, you live alone. I was like, dude, you live alone. All right. What are you whispering about? And he goes, no man, you really need to try this. I found this online and I think you're gonna like it. I'm like, you know, look, I had gotten rid of my Xbox. I didn't have any gaming equipment.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
I was an adult.
Right, of course.
Don't look at me like that. Come on. It was when he brought that up, I was like, hey, you know, I was in a position where I was under a lot of stress. And I was like, hey, maybe this may give me an out, something to look. It was either that or drinking, and I figured that would be a better route.
Right, healthier choice.
Well, because alcohol, it's a gateway drug to heroin.
Right.
So I just didn't want to go geographic, that route.
Right.
Exactly. So anyway, so I got online, and we started playing this game. It's called Destiny. And it's completely online,
right?
So we've been playing, geez, since the inception of that game.
Wow,
that was a while ago too. Yeah, we got the first version,
right?
That was put out. I think it dropped like in September of that year, and we got it in like October.
Right.
So it was. This is how we stay connected to each other. Instead of like calling each other on the phone, we just get online and game and talk right. about whatever. Usually listening to him bitch about one thing or another. but, you know, love him like a brother, you know. So, and it's, It's fun. It's a great way for us to connect.
Right. That's one thing I love about how gaming is now. Because I feel like it allows people to stay connected. Like a lot of times when I meet new people and I find out they play a similar game that I have, I'm like, hey, let's play together. Because it allows me to see how their teamwork is. Like if they can work, we can work together properly, or are they going to stray away and do their own thing, and then I'm left doing everything on my own. You know,
Plus, you have to, you know, there's a lot of different things that come to play. One is, how good are they?
Right.
You know, and are they at the same level you are?
Right.
And I'm not talking about like pro level or something like that, but somebody who's been gaming for a little while has a better understanding and a better control over their, controller, you know, how to operate their controller than somebody who's only been doing it for like a month.
Right, that's true. That is true.
And is that going to work? Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, my buddy and I used to, we laugh a lot because we think back to when we first started, and you know, we were older, right?
Right.
So we were like these. What did they used to call them? We were like these hyperactive kids. and when things didn't go our way, we were throwing tantrums. I don't know how many controllers I went through in that short period of time. I mean, there was a moment where I had a box full of controllers next to my chair because I knew sometime that month I was gonna break one.
Right.
Because like, fuck that, man. You know, it was like throw it across the room.
Right.
It's like, no, not again, not again. That boss can't beat me that many times, you know. It's like, oh,
my God.
Yeah, we laugh, and today we just laugh at how we used to be. It's like, man, we were like psycho in that shit. Like, yeah, we were.
The good thing you had the luxury to buy more controllers when I was younger. Yeah. I was younger. If I broke my controller, I was stuck with that controller for months.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I used to buy them wholesale by the case. It's like, you have not reached level 34. And I'm like, fuck. Yeah, there goes one.
Right.
It would explode against the wall. My wife would come in. What are you doing? It slipped.
Just the game.
Yeah, exactly. No, man, it's much more than that. It's much more.
Oh, yeah. It feels like much more. When you're really in the game, it's almost like really there. Like, you go through all the emotions.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. You're like, it's not something I would recommend for somebody who's already hyperactive. Not something I would recommend.
Right, if you need regular whole game for
talk
you.
Talk about getting spun up, man.
Right.
Damn. I mean, you can just sit there. And what's funny is my friend and I, when we play, I'm pretty aggressive.
Right.
So I want to kill as much shit as possible. Right? or if we're playing against other players in certain maps.
Right.
I'm like, I'm going to be the number one killer. I'm going to be the number one killer. You know, and that's like my whole focus. And when I don't, or I screw up, I'm like pissed off. Right? Childish, I know. Believe me, I know this. You know, I have a lot of introspection into this stuff.
I used to be the same way when it comes to Battlefront and Call of Duty. Like, I had my issue in the beginning. Like, I called it the diehard effect. I thought, I don't need a team. I got this.
And yeah, exactly. In there,
trying to shoot around. I got this.
And you're like, dead.
Right.
Dead.
Somebody sniped me from
Why do you keep dying?
And then you get mad. I'm like, why?
Let me play. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I got to win. I need to win it. Or it gets so intense. Sometimes it gets so intense. And you keep getting just fucked up every time. It's like you walk around the corner, you're like, no, I'm going to make it this time. I'm going to make it this time. All right. You know, and then all of a sudden everything blows up, right? And then you're like, okay. I need to take a step back. I need to, like, take a drink or
You step away from the game.
Well, that's, yeah, that would probably be the
logical choice.
Logical thing to do. But no.
Most likely not. I've had friends, like, I'll be playing a video game. Like, one of my earliest memories of this is I had a group of friends, we all hang out, mostly after we were done filming, and this early PlayStation, they're like PlayStation 2 or 3, and there was this game called Def Jam Vendetta. It was like a fighting game, you know, most like the WWE, WWF games. So, yeah, all these rappers who's
Def
fighting.
Def Jam Vendetta.
Def Jam
Vendetta. That sounds like, that, oh, man, what was that thing that was on,
There was
this death match.
Oh yeah, celebrity death match. Yes.
Yeah, celebrity death match, and they were like clay figures and stuff.
Right. They needed a video game for that. I think they won the video game.
God, that was hilarious.
I think they did have a video game for that, if I'm not mistaken. I think they was a celebrity death match video game at one point.
Was that on MTV or something?
I don't know. That was on MTV. Yeah, that was early MTV. It was a butthead day.
That stuff was just priceless.
Yeah,
priceless. That stuff.
Like, I gotta see if I give me a copy of that game. I'm sure that copy is somewhere. They gotta have it somewhere. I got to. Just for nostalgia. I need it.
Yeah, no, it's like, hey, Johnny, tonight we have, you know, whoever.
Right.
Bruce Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce Lee versus Ray Romano.
And whoever had to do the voices, they got them spot on. They were like,
spot on. It was just. Yeah, it was great. I mean, some of that stuff, it's like, you know, some of those early cartoons when they first came out, like South Park and Ren and Stimpy.
Oh.
Man, let me tell you something, man. When Ren and Stimpy came out, I had no idea what it was going to be.
Right.
Because I wasn't in that universe, you know. I just stopped. And I don't even remember how I found it. And I started watching it, and I was like, "Oh, this is a cartoon. This looks pretty funny." Yeah. And I was like, start watching it, dude. I literally was crying about halfway through the first episode. I could not believe how freaking hilarious this shit was. And my wife was looking at me, going, "Like, really?
Like,
really?
I thought you were more mature than that."
Yeah, exactly. Sorry, honey.
Like, this is who you married. I'm sorry.
It's
better you come to terms with this now.
It's just, wow. Yeah.
When that show first came on, it was on a children's network first before it went to I think it was Spike TV. So I was just so amazed. Like,
how the hell did they do that?
Like, how did they get away with that for so long?
Oh, somebody was trying to subvert. Yeah, that was some deep-seated propaganda right there.
Right. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. There were some definite subversion going on with that. But that was funny.
But with Def Jam Vendetta. So in the game, you play any rappers. You know, you got your DMX, you know, your Fat Joe's, you know, like all the big name rappers of that era. Right? And they would talk, you know, it's just like the WWE, the WWF at the time, but, you know, it's with rappers. So they even, you know, a lot more aggressive than the usual wrestlers. So, you know, they're like talking about your mother, you know, they're calling you out your name. So you get real, like, oh, I gotta beat this man. I gotta beat him down. And in the PlayStation 2 version, there was a rapper named Fat Joe, and he was just so hard to beat. Like, I was literally just sitting there, get upset, like, no, I'm gonna beat this. And I felt so bad for my crew, because they were just there for 3 hours just watching me yelling at my TV, throwing my controller around. They're like, hey man, it's okay, let's just let it go. I'm like, no,
exactly.
No, exactly. He keeps doing this. I can't let him win. I can't. They're like, dude, just relax.
Yeah,
it's just a game.
It's like you got Fat Joe-itis.
I still have PTSD from those days.
Oh, yeah, man.
I hear that music, like, and I just start thinking, like, oh, no, here we go.
All of a sudden, you realize you got, like a hitch going in your eye. You're, like, walking around, like, dude, like, what is wrong with your eye? Nothing.
I'm fine.
Yeah, exactly. I'm fine. I'm fine. Put the gun down.
Right. You know, what's interesting about that, that I think about it, when I was younger, those games used to get me really, really angry. And now when I play video games, I try my hardest not to put myself in positions where I get that angry. Like, yeah. I play a lot of Grand Theft Auto Online, and I really try my best to mind my own business and just do my side missions. Just, you know, basically just make my living in the video game world. Just go about my business. And I think it's so interesting compared to when I was younger, where, you know, it was all about, let's run people over. Let's go kill this hooker. Let's go rob this store. And now I'm just like, no, I'm more mature now. You know, I just want to go to work and go home, and then I don't fight nobody until, you know, somebody drops a bomb on me when I'm walking down the street. Now it's World War IV. Like I literally just be minding my own business. I was almost like I'm like Clint Eastwood in the recent Clint Eastwood movies, where I'm just an old man. I just want to go about my day until these little kids come around my way and I go crazy.
So later, you know, I don't know, maybe a month or so from now, you're going to listen back at this, and you're going to hear that part about you walking home, and I wasn't killing any hookers that day. And I was like, what? And you're going to sit there and you're going to go, did I actually say that?
Okay. If you speak to anybody who played Grand Theft Auto, they will tell you a moment when they learn they could kill a hooker in the game. That's probably one of the first things you learn when you play Grand Theft Auto. I have a nephew, and he's a few years older than me because my sister's older than me, so she had him before I was born. And he brought over, this was Vice City, Grand Theft Auto Vice City. So this one takes place more in the 80s. So this is, you know, it takes place around your Scarface era, you know, it's Miami's in the 80s. And he, you know, he got one of the cars from Miami Vice. He's like, cuz, let me show you this. So, you know, I'm a kid, so I'm excited. I'm like, oh, cool. They're like, show me what you're going to do. So he picks up the girl. And then I'm like, oh, cool, you get to pick up girls in the game? He's like, yeah, but that's not what I'm trying to show you. So I'm like, ooh, what happened? So, you know, they're doing it in the car. Now, this is early 2000s, so the graphics aren't as great as it is now, where it's completely graphic. You see the whole interaction. Back then, all you saw was the car rocking, you know, and that was just enough for us to go, ooh, they're doing it in the car. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, this is it. That's all. That's all he's getting ready to show me. He's like, nope, Miles, that's not it.
Miles, this is giving me a window into why I feel the way I do about you. It's like, there was some times where I really thought there was some, like, deep-seated issues going on, and now I'm starting to see why.
You're connecting the dots now. You see it? You're able to connect every episode.
I was like, my God. So you were exposed
early on. God. In video games.
Can you imagine the kids nowadays?
Oh no,
with online porn.
Oh no,
okay. Please tell me that just hasn't screwed up a whole generation.
Oh no, it has. I know for a fact it has. You know, back then, you know, if you had like MSN or AOL, you had to go through the dial-up, and then, you know, the broadband wasn't great, so, you know, you had like.
Yep.
Seconds, like my when I think about porn back in the day, I think of my generation, when people my age were always talking about the old cable boxes that we had, and you know, we'll sneak to watch like the Playboy channel on mute, and then somebody will come and like, oh no, change the channel. You know, that was our, that was our experience.
It was like Cinemax for me. Right.
Who's that?
Friday night Cinemax, you know,
late night after hours. But
exactly.
But now kids, you know, they got the phones in their pockets. You know, they don't have to sneak around the parents. They just don't have to be home and just go online and boop, boop, 1, 2, 3, and just find it.
It's just like, oh, yeah, it is definitely assisting in the delinquency of our youth. No question. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Right. And people were saying this before, years ago, because I remember playing games like, you ever heard of Duke Nukem?
Yeah.
Yeah, Duke Nukem, if that game came out today, people were like, oh, that's the most misogynistic, sexist game ever, that game came out today. Because like the one I played, I think, multiple times, was called Duke Nukem Land of the Babes. And Duke Nukem, like, all the women on Earth got kidnapped and brought to another planet. And Duke Nukem basically had to go on that planet and save all the women. And, like, when I say it was, like, you know, you walk into the showers, the girls are naked, they're all soaked and studded up and everything like that. And my 10 years old at the time, I was, you know, just going crazy over there. Like, oh my God, look at that. They got butts. They got boobs. You know, and graphics were not compared to today, where now they're fully detailed. Like, you can see every shape.
Oh, yeah.
Now, like
kids, oh, yeah, man.
I'm pretty sure like they got a whole
dude, they don't even need that. They just watch any kind of rap video.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean, like
any music now, because not even just rap. I feel like even pop has gone to that level. Even R&B. Like I remember when Robin Thicke did a Blurred Lines video, and the girls were just naked. There was no blurred lines in that video. Like, I saw everything. I was like, wait.
Yeah. Well, what?
It's not a pop.
And, you know, and unfortunately, we talked about this before, you know, that kind of stuff affects relationships.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Huge. Yeah, because kids are getting their, you know, it's like we talked about before. You know, how many single parent homes are there in the country?
Right.
I'm not even talking about race. I'm just talking about general.
General, right.
And so they're already deficit in a strong, what an example of a strong relationship is.
Right.
And then add all this other stuff that,
you think the video game.
Now I understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand in order to have a meaningful relationship, I gotta wear chains around my neck, or I gotta be, you know, I gotta be the
more
the more hip guy. I gotta, you know, whatever, you know.
Right.
It's like, and I don't want to lean into one area or another, but in general, and it has done such a disservice to young people.
It has, because they don't know, you know, right from wrong. They don't know the proper way to court someone. You know, it just basically, we're basically just doing what we've been seeing for like the last decade or so. You know, even further than that. You know, just like, oh, this is how I talk to a woman. This is how I approach different people on the street. You know, and it doesn't work that way. You know, like I realized that especially because I'm in the entertainment industry. As a young, I realized, you know, this is entertainment. This doesn't mean I grew up watching a lot of James Bond with my mom. I think I was at least maybe 16 when I realized that James Bond's way of seducing women was not going to work for me at all. I was no Roger Moore. I was no Sean Connery.
Exactly.
You know, none of that was going to work for me at all. None of that was going to work. And especially the stuff I was seeing in music videos and like video games, none of that ever played out. None of that. But, you know, a lot of people grow up, especially, you know, they don't have, you know, it's, you know, a father or a mother at home that really talks to them about like, hey, this is how things are. This is how people really are. You know, they really just go based off what they learned from the media, from entertainment media.
And the other thing is that when they get out there and they're of an age to start having relationships, their expectations are what they saw.
Right. Especially
if they watch which are all fantasies. All of it.
Right.
It's fantasy.
Right.
That stuff isn't in real life. You're not going to find that person. Okay?
Right.
Because they don't exist. You know,
somebody had to write that.
They're playing a part. They're playing a part. You know, even at, like these guys that go to strip clubs. It's the same thing.
Right.
The same thing. You think that is how she really is?
Right.
You think that's no. No,
she's,
that's
like
her
you,
job, dude. That's her job. That's her job to separate you from your cash.
That's the one thing.
That's
her
job.
I think that was the best thing I've learned from video games is not to go to strip clubs because of that. Because of games like Duke Nukem and Grand Theft Auto, I've never, on my own accord, went to a strip club. It's like, I'm going to just go spend a whole bunch of money today at a strip club. Like, nah, I know how this works. Exactly. I know how this is going to play out. I'm okay.
I probably shouldn't be telling you this, but I've had some experiences in these clubs, and the dancers will tell you that there are two kind of guys that go to the club. One are fans, and the other are players.
Right.
The players are the ones that don't pay.
Right.
The fans are the ones that give up their house.
Which I always thought. You need a computer?
Yeah. No, exactly. Oh, honey, help me with this. Yeah. No, believe me. It's like, It was funny. It was strange.
You ever seen that film Hustlers with Jennifer Lopez?
No, I have no desire to see that shit.
That movie is basically Goodfellas for strippers.
Exactly. And, you know, based off real life. You know,
right. That was a true story. I remember reading the article about it before they even put the film in pre-production.
I mean, that thing got, you know, that's why Scores got closed out.
Right.
Here in New York.
Right.
Because of all that stuff. But, you know, it just goes to show you that, again, fantasy.
Right.
Not real.
Not real.
Not real. She is not part of your, you know, your posse, your gang, whatever.
Right.
She is not in your, she is not in your world.
Right. And in the video game, I'm telling you, they like, especially like game like Grand Theft Auto, like they, I guess, program you to believe like, hey, you go to the club, you give this girl a right amount of money, she's gonna go home with you. Because in the game, you know, that's what happens. You know, you tip a girl enough money.
And then if the other side of that is that if she does,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to wake up in the morning.
Right. And if you do, you're missing a rib or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You're in a tub full of ice.
Yeah. You're like, why do I have an incision on my back? Oh, wait a minute. Is that my hip? I don't know. And that's... People are lonely.
Oh yeah.
In general, bro.
Mm-hmm.
And they just want to belong.
Right.
Yeah, you know, they just want to belong. And unfortunately, the only things that without a true a deep sense of self,
right.
or a strong support system,
mm-hmm.
They're out there on their own, and
right.
and you know, the entertainment and advertising businesses know that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, come on over here. We're going to show you how your life can be better.
Right.
You know? And
like them old Tommy Woo commercials. Like, you want the secrets to success? Come to my seminar. Like, all the girls on a yacht.
Tommy Woo. That's awesome. I mean, that shit. Dude, that stuff goes back way before him.
Right.
I mean, they were doing that stuff back when Amway started, you know, back in the, what was that, 50s?
Right.
Same kind of stuff.
Right.
And it's just trying to sell the dream to people.
Right, right.
And that's why people buy into that stuff.
Right.
All day long. Supplement industry is a classic example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Take this pill and you're going to be a better man.
Right.
Whatever facet of man we're talking about.
Right.
Take
a Limitless pill today, just like the movie Limitless.
Yeah. No, exactly.
I'll tell you right now, they had that pill.
The cosmetic industry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, those are straight up gangsters in that thing, man.
Mm-hmm.
Straight up gangsters. They've been doing that for centuries.
Mm-hmm. You don't like how you look? Well, we'll take care of that.
Absolutely. Well, you don't have to look like you look right now. No questions. Come on over here. We're going to make you beautiful. And, you know, sometimes you can definitely improve on somebody's looks to a point.
Right.
You are not going to change them.
And the thing is, if you're not happy with yourself, no matter what you do to yourself, you'll still find something to be unhappy about.
Correct.
That's one of the things I've learned early on, as I was, you know, especially when I started reading all these self-help books when I was in my early 20s. You know, I realized, like, you know, no matter how many stuff I buy, no matter what movie I go see, no matter what game I buy, if I'm not happy with what I'm doing by myself when I'm not doing any of those extracurricular things, then I'm always going to be searching for something to, you know, prove my worth to myself.
Yeah, exactly. And everybody, you know, everybody has their own stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we, you know, as we've talked about before, life is messy.
Right.
Life is messy and life is freaking hard.
Right.
And, you know, you don't just get a pass
mm-hmm.
because you want to whine about what you got, didn't get, you know, mm-hmm. you weren't endowed with certain, you know, genetic appearance or whatever.
Right.
You know, or you grew up in the wrong town, or you grew up in the wrong community or culture or whatever.
Right.
Okay, number one, stop whining because that shit don't matter.
Right.
What matters is what you think about yourself.
Right.
And, you know, it's kind of cliche, but, you know, love yourself, you're going to love everything else.
Right. It's true, though.
You want to have deep relationships, love yourself. You want to have successful careers, love yourself. If you want to feel like you're at peace or you are finding peace of mind, that kind of thing, that all comes from self-love.
Right. And most people aren't even looking for it. They're just like, you know, I'm just going to go buy this drink, or I'm just going to play some games. You know, basically everybody likes to distract themselves other than realizing what's going on eternally.
No, that's the exact word I was going to use is they want distractions.
Right.
Because, like I said, it's hard to look at yourself. It's hard to understand that, you know, what you want and what you need can be completely different on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Right.
And people's inability to accept that is why so many people are lost.
Right. I read this book. It was written by Robert Greene of the 48 Laws of Power. It's him and 50 Cent. They wrote a book called The 50 of Law. And there was this one quote in the book. It was, your inability to cope with reality will be your ruin. And once I heard that, I never forgot that. I was like, that is the most truest statement I've ever heard in my life.
Yep.
Like, anytime I start to distract myself, I start repeating that to myself. Like, my inability to cope with reality is going to be my ruin. And then that's when that is getting me focused. All right, let me pay attention. Let me stay focused on the moment that is. Because the moment you stop focusing on reality, you know, like I said, it will be your ruin. That's when you start bringing yourself down.
Right. And it's a, it's really the key to everything.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And it's coming to grips with that. And look, it's not. And the other thing is, people get this thing about, if I do A, I will get B.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a linear way of looking at things. And
right.
That's not how this stuff works.
It doesn't.
No. Yeah. I mean, you can know yourself pretty well, but that doesn't mean that you're not going to feel sad or that you're not going to feel depressed, or you're not going to feel disillusioned or not, you know, those things are going to happen because that's life.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get slapped around in life.
Right.
You know, if you are fortunate enough to understand yourself, you will be able to pull yourself through those things relatively unscathed.
Right.
But, you know, stuff is going to happen to you. You can't avoid it.
Right. That's literally part of life.
Well, it's like, you can sit in a room by yourself your whole life. Believe me, shit's still going to happen to you.
Right. Not going to quit everything.
A, you're going to lose your freaking mind, number one.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's, so you can't avoid it.
Right.
You know, and there's no reason to be afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to know that it's going to happen.
Right. Can't be bubble boy.
Yeah, and how you deal with that is really everything right there.
Mm-hmm.
How you deal with it. And how you deal with it is going to come from how well you know yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
And as always, people, that's you know, that's why we always say, you know, be the change you want to see in the world.
Be the change. T-shirts to come.
Right. Until next time, guys.